All right, Thursday in New York City, one of the safer cities in the world, but not according to Jeff Sessions. No. This is a murder capital of the world. I think he's confusing Chicago with New York City. Crazy, right? And we got world leaders just like vying for the most insane person in the world. It's just incredible the times that we're living in. The show is Insight. The network is the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it. I think we got some sunlight happening here in New York today. Yay! 4 days of rain and no vitamin D. Not a cool thing. So yeah, Jeff Sessions was giving some nasty remarks aimed at de Blasio the other day. And you know, I'm not a huge de Blasio fan, but you know what? Good for him. He fought back. And he struck back big time, unequivocally, and saying that we are not soft on crime at New York City, here in New York City, the Grand Manzana. And that's good, because Jeff Sessions does know his ass from his elbow. It is a scary time we're thinking about. You know, when I'm talking before about the world leaders, I mean, North Korea, Russia. Hey, oh yeah, even number 42. Number 42 is out of his mind. Crazy times we're living in. So we got a great show. We got two guests. Great guests coming to you, as always. First one you're going to be meeting in the halfway point of the show is Calvin Schwartz. He's a writer, radio and talk show host. You got to watch out for those radio guys, TV guys, man. They're just brutal. Calvin Schwartz. And he's a great guy. He's going to have a lot of information to give us. And Adam Kahn. Adam's a director, producer. And we met each other through a mutual friend not that long ago. And he's on the verge of completing a new film called Sunset and the Mockingbird. It's a feature documentary that tells a love story. Yeah, love story in jazz, right? Love story of legendary jazz pianist Junior Mance and his manager and soulmate Gloria Claiborne Mance. And it's an incredible film. We need one thing. We need you to listen, because we may need you to pony up, because we need some funds to finish this incredible, incredible film. So the other day I was checking out Chelsea Handler is I dig her. You know, she was on my show a couple years ago, and she is just like you see her. She's wild, and we had a crazy, crazy fun time. And actually, that's when I was on terrestrial radio in New York City, the rock station 101.9 RXP. So it was semi-R-rated, but we had a dance around things. But if I had her on now, I mean, it would be, you know, no holds barred. So I have to get her back on. But it was pretty cool. If you've ever seen her show, it's on Netflix. It's called Chelsea. And she had on one of my, I guess he's one of my up-and-coming favorite actors, Camille Nanjimi. I'm going to practice this live on air. Nanjinini, something like that. He's Muslim, if you haven't figured that out. Anyway, he's one of the stars of the hit HBO show Silicon Valley. And I think he's great. I think his dry sense of humor, his passivity, everything about his character is really, really great. And I think he brings a lot to the stage. And here's a bit of what transpired the other day on Chelsea and Camille.
No, like, pop cultural image of Muslims who are open-minded, really? Like, when you think of Muslim, what do you see in your head?
I think of serious people. Serious people.
There's a beard.
Yes,
you're seeing a beard.
And very kind of serious, not like fun.
Right, that's what I mean. My wife, who's white and
ooh, how'd you get one of those?
You know, she was sort of rebelling against her parents, and I struck while the iron was hot. It was the time. But she wanted to have a... She wanted to start a Tumblr called Muslims Having Fun, because you never see them. Like, when you go to, like, a theme park, you see Muslim people, and they're eating ice cream, and they're screaming on roller coasters. Why don't we ever see those Muslims?
Right.
Why do we only think of Muslims on the news when we think of Muslims? You know, I'm Muslim. Look at me. I'm cool.
Yes, he is. Incredible segment there. Anyway, it's just I bring that up to bring to you today because it's very vital these times that we're living in, the uncertain times, and people really pointing fingers at each other, especially our government, about ousting people or building walls. I mean, hey, we may not have any governments the lights on at 12:01 Saturday night or 12:01 Saturday morning because our company or our country can't pass a budget. because Republicans don't want certain things in there about Obamacare, and the Democrats don't want anything in there about the wall. And of course, there's a lot of things about safety cities, et cetera, sanctuary cities. And so there's a lot of upheaval. And when I heard that, and it goes on about, you know, just about it's his job, the injustice he's trying to break, and through his comedic endeavors and acting and everything that he's been doing. He's been actually on a lot of different TV shows, cameos, et cetera, working up to that stint on Silicon Valley. If you haven't seen Silicon Valley, check it out. It's on Sunday nights on HBO. I think it may be the fourth or fifth season. It's really well done. And it's pretty funny because you can tell that it's really truly depicting what the world is like out there by these 20-some-odd kids who are, you know, brainiacs, software engineers, developers, designers, but, you know, are developing these platforms that, you know, the world could possibly utilize, but the money and the treacherous behavior and backstabbing and, oh my Lord, it's incredible. And of course, there's a lot of humor involved because there's a lot of other great actors that are on set for that. So I wanted to bring that to your attention for two reasons, because he's just a hell of an actor, and also it's a great show. So there's a piece of music I want you to hear. Take a listen to this. So if you got your phone or your computer or whatever digital device you're listening to, lean over and turn it up, because this is an incredible song. This is by our the focus of the movie we're going to be talking about, Sunset and the Mockingbird, Junior Mance. And this is a tune called Blue Monk. Junior Mance Trio, Blue Monk. Wow, riveting stuff, right? So he's an incredible musician. He's still with us nowadays, certainly. He recorded over 100 albums in his career. 100 albums. I mean, that's 100 more than I ever even dreamed of creating. Spans his career is over 70 years. And he's played with Charlie Parker, Dizzy, Duke Ellington, Dinah Washington, Charlie Parker. I mean, all these greats. He's a pianist, he's a composer, and there's a forthcoming film we're going to be talking about that Adam Kahn, who's a producer-director, is one of the partners in this film. And Adam was the recipient of a NYSCA Individual Artist Grant for this film, which we're very, very thankful for. The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, his previous film, premiered at the 2014 South by Southwest Film Festival, went on to play multiple festivals worldwide and won two Best of Festival Awards. LA's Pan-African Film Festival and Germany's Soundtrack Cologne was named one of the top films of there. And I'm very, very happy that this film has brought Adam Kahn to the studio. Adam, how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
When did music get into your blood? Because obviously film has been there for a long time, but
yeah,
music plays in a vital role of who you are.
Absolutely. Well, I started, my mother was a piano teacher, so I started at a young age, but I am a bass player. But, you know, the music and jazz, and specifically jazz and film, all kind of converged in the around 1989 when I first discovered Rahsaan Roland Kirk, who was the subject of my last film. And at the same time, I was making Super 8 films, kind of learning filmmaking from the ground up. And so I started making documentaries, started making music documentaries, and then, you know, over some time we arrive here today where I'm working on another film about a musician. Though, you know, it's certainly not just a quote-unquote music film. There's a lot going on here.
So what brought your attention to Junior Mance? Was it that he started to play piano at 5 years old and has first gig at 10?
Well, yeah. It's always nice to do a film on somebody who really is deeply into what they're doing, and Junior and top of their game, which Junior, or, you know, is an A-list kind of, you know, top,
hugely,
top person.
Yes.
Yeah. So certainly that probably is what hooked me into Junior. But, you know, my partner in the film, Jillian Gunther, who's a co-director, co-producer, she had met Gloria, Junior's wife, and kind of learned the story of the two of them, because the film, as you said earlier, really is a love story. So she met Gloria, and, you know, Jillian has made a number of films herself, and often cinema verite style and stuff more about relationships, and I was coming more from a music film background.
So great hybrid, though.
Yeah, so it really made sense. So she asked me to join her on the film, you know, when she discovered who Glory's husband was, Junior Mance, with this giant jazz legacy. And that's how we kind of got together to partner on this film.
Now, it's amazing how someone's life trajectory can change for the worse, and sometimes for the better, in, you know, a matter of days or in seconds sometimes. So Junior experienced a stroke.
Yes.
Which led to his forthcoming dementia.
Yes.
And his playing, remarkably, was intact for several more years.
Yes.
Because that's long-term memory, and obviously it's ingrained. I mean, he probably knows how to play the piano better than walking.
And I would say yes.
Exactly.
He's doing more piano playing than walking, though. He's doing less of both of those things.
So when this concept came to you, what stage was Junior in?
Right. So we... there's a lot there. There's a lot in the story. So, but, you know, when we first started working with them, it was post-stroke. And just to go back to one thing you said, yeah, Gloria has said, you know, several times she had, I believe it was something like 15 years of, you know, the perfect marriage, the perfect life. And then this stroke occurred.
That exists? Really,
well,
perfect marriage?
I guess it did, you know.
Love you, honey.
It exists only for, you know, a moment, though. Everything's, you know, only temporary. But she... So he had the stroke, I believe it was
2007?
I don't have my dates exact. But by the time we got to them, Junior had already Alzheimer's, dementia, but he was still gigging. So he was highly functioning. You know, one of the big things in our film, well, one thing we do is we try to reconstruct the past, where Gloria is kind of discovering, and we as viewers in the film will kind of see his trajectory prior to the stroke. Again, what you mentioned, playing with Dizzy Gillespie and coming from Chicago and being a child prodigy and all these great things. But then, you know, certainly when we jumped in on the film, he was still high, in pretty good shape for having dementia, and he was still gigging out. But one of the things we witness in the film is where he stops playing out. That's a big marker in the film. He doesn't perform in public anymore, though he does play at home.
Was there a treasure trove of footage with all these greats that you had to go through?
There is a treasure trove. You know, unlike my last film, which I started kind of before the internet got its legs, and then I put that film down. I'm older than I look. But in any case, you know, now you can Google him, of course, and find a gazillion clips of great stuff. So, I mean, we really have anything to pick from. And, you know, we'll certainly use a clip with Junior, with Dizzy Gillespie and possibly Dexter Gordon. But, you know, the real treasure trove, I think, is what we're filming. We filmed his last gig playing live. We filmed his last CD recording.
Right here in the city?
Yeah, right here in the city. He used to play at Cafe Loop on 13th Street. I have a weekly gig, so we shot there a lot. You know, it's nice to nice that Junior is still with us, that we have all this very immediate footage of him and him at home with Gloria, him playing. So that's the... You'll also get to see Dizzy Gillespie. And
we're going to hear a piece of this. This is the trailer for Sunset and the Mockingbird.
We're on a jazz cruise, and he asked me, would I marry you?
I did?
Yeah, and what did I say to you? What did I say to you the next day? Because you had probably two bottles of wine.
Know.
We probably had three. Yeah. I said to you, do you remember what you asked me? I was trying to be so impity. Do you remember what you asked me last night? You say, yes, I do. And I responded, I said, look, you can withdraw that question.
And I didn't know which question to withdraw.
September the 15th, Junior woke me up and asked me, where's Gloria? I am Gloria. Who do you think I am? He responded, I don't know.
These are my two buddies. He hasn't really got a name yet. The turtle there, he's something. I didn't bring all these animals in here, but I love them. Yeah, they are all gifts.
Now that's the voice of Junior and his wife, Gloria. And I have to tell you, Adam Khan, that in that 5 minute plus trailer piece, you start falling in love with them.
Yeah.
Because it's palpable.
We did. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I'm sure you did, yeah. But I did it only in a five-minute trailer piece.
Well,
because it worked. You can just see how the relationship works, and obviously in his decline, and obviously this is not a purposeful title, I don't think, the sunset, because obviously with people with dementia, there's a sunsetting effect. Is that a double entendre or just accidental?
I think, just first off, on your first point, yeah, I mean, the value and the great thing about this film is you get really intimate. We're in their apartment a lot, and we've gotten to know Junior and Gloria so well, and the camera has, and the footage, you know, he's just talking about the animals in his house, and he is just, you know, a sweet guy, and Gloria is just keeping it all together, and she's kind of a, you know, the rock of the film, but... you know, the title is based on a Duke Ellington tune that Junior plays that song a lot.
Excellent tune.
You know, we're like, okay, so is one sunset and the other on the mockingbird? I think you can read into it. I'm not sure if there's an on-the-nose kind of analogy there, but it's definitely the feeling of the title, I think, is the feeling of the film. You know, definitely sunset is happening for Junior for sure. He's 88 years old, and he's, you know, unfortunately, he's probably not going to be with us that much longer.
When you start coming up with the epiphany of a film of this nature, as we talked about before, and then you start getting into work, just like anyone who takes on a new job, sometimes you go, uh-oh, what have I gotten myself into? Not really a great way, but then sometimes you're like, wow, I'm feeling like this is really going to connect. And I imagine this probably clicked for you immediately. Sure, the staging plans with your co-producer and director, Julian Gunther, by the way, is an Emmy-winning director who unfortunately couldn't be here, so we wish her all the best with the continuation of the film and can do it in person. But I imagine there's a part of you that just says, especially with your mother being a pianist, you said?
Yes.
And you growing up in a music environment, that just can't get any better.
Yeah, it can't, but yeah, I mean, we're certainly in awe of just being, you know, in proximity and spending all this time with Junior and Gloria. That's amazing. You know, but the downside is the conclusion of the film is probably going to be the conclusion of Junior, you know, this great person. Not that, you know, we necessarily have to, and we hope we're not around for when he passes, but, you know, it's all leading to something, because in the film we talk about his career. You mentioned him playing at the age of 10. You know, we're going to see this whole trajectory of Junior's life, and then the trajectory of his relationship with his wife, with Gloria. And, you know, it's the end is not going to be, well, we hope the end will be uplifting, because his legacy will continue, and that's also what this film is about, preserving his legacy. So that's huge, and that's also why Gloria especially wanted to have this film made.
When I think about this film, I think of two points or many components that I love about this film. But first and foremost, about his decline, that with dementia, and of course we don't know it's Alzheimer's, because unless there's an autopsy done on a brain, you don't know exactly what kind of dementia it was. But it brings attention to a very vital issue.
Yes.
Like Ronald Reagan brought it to. There's a woman who I used to have on my radio show years ago, B. Smith, Barbara Smith. Remember her? She's owned a restaurant in the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, called B. Smith's. She's the first African-American model to be on a major cover, like Vogue or something. Beautiful.
Okay.
Restaurateur, incredible person. She has the onset of some form of dementia at a very, very young age, in the 50s. So when you bring a person of the public eye, no one wants to obviously have any debilitating disease or life-threatening disease, but it does bring awareness.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then secondly, it does uncover he's not – Junior Mance is not a household jazz name unless you're in the know.
No, you're correct.
This is something that I feel so tragically sad about with a lot of jazz. Some of them are, are greats in their own right circle, but they're not household names, and or people who have love of music, and certainly outside of their macro love of certain genres will know their names. But this really uncovers a great art form of music that all music was built on.
Well, yeah, and that's really why I got into making films about music, and specifically jazz and jazz musicians, because you have so many great players who have really contributed to the vocabulary. And, you know, as you, I'm sure you know, jazz was popular music in the 40s. And you just have people like Junior, who's made over 100 records with the greatest musicians, the top shelf. And tons of these musicians whose stories are not known. So it's great to have that. But also, you know, you're mentioning the Alzheimer's. It's nice to... We wrestle with something on this film is that we, you know, we don't want to make just a quote-unquote jazz film, because then you're basically, you have a microcosm that you appeal to, and outside of that, you're done. So, you know, the fact that we're talking about Alzheimer's, the fact that we're talking about a relationship, the fact that really Gloria Claiborne is the protagonist in this film, too, and she's, again, the one holding everything together. You know, her relationship with Junior, falling in love, and then becoming his support system. And again, the disease, you know, it's a broad story.
And then there's another element, Adam Khan, is the racism. He got kicked out of school for possibly being African-American, also playing the widely unaccepted form of jazz music.
Well, yeah, I think it was more musicism. But, you know, we do travel to Evanston, Chicago, outside of Chicago, where he's from. And we do talk to friends of his from his childhood. And, you know, they do talk about a little about racism, but it's less in Junior Mance's story, though. You know, being African-American and 88 years old, he certainly went through it. Yeah, he went to school. Well, the school story is interesting because his mother wanted him to be a doctor, and there's no way he was going to do that.
Like every mother.
You're sure? Yeah. And then he...
So our apologies to Mrs. Khan and Mom. Mrs. Farrell right now. Sorry, guys, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, they still love us.
I like pharmaceuticals, though.
So, but, you know, then he was in school where they were teaching classical music, and he started playing jazz, and they didn't like that so much. But, you know, a lot of the jazz musicians of his generation, they don't really care for music school anyway. You know, I talk to a lot of I've made several films on jazz musicians, and they always say, you know, you don't need school. You know, Louis Armstrong didn't go to school. Duke Ellington didn't go to school. Miles went to school for a minute just to meet Coltrane, and then he quit.
That's right.
So the
road is their school.
Yeah.
The stage.
And now, you know, they carry, this is why a film on Junior is important too, because they carry that forward. You know, everything he's played, he's got the history of jazz and everything he's playing. You know, there earlier you played a tune by Monk, written by Monk, that Junior was performing. And, you know, it's all kind of a continuum.
And serendipity, Adam Khan, really plays a role, because how many times was Junior Mance at the right place at the right time? Someone couldn't fill in, wasn't available, and they said, hey, Junior, can you fill in?
Right. Well,
and that was pretty pivotal.
A lot of these guys face tough choices. Yeah. You know, it's like, do I play with Dizzy right now, or Dexter Gordon's calling? I don't know.
Or one gentleman, I forget who, in the trailer, somebody misses a plane. And he gets a fill-in for somebody great, and that's kind of how a legacy relationship starts.
Yeah, for sure, yeah, and that happens all the time. So it's great to have so many great players out. And for Junior, you know, to be a top guy that people want to call, people want him to play. And, you know, people want to see the film, too, because he's was such a fixture in New York for such a long time.
Adam Khan is the co-creator of Sunset and the Mockingbird, along with Jillian Gunther, who couldn't be here today. Was there a lot of any footage or talk in the film with Junior and or his wife, Gloria, about the composing process and how he came up with certain songs?
You know, Jubilation is a tune he wrote that's big and a lot of guys played. And there's even a group called Jubilation back in his hometown, where they're doing kind of social stuff. So, you know, we have talked about that composition. We don't get too deep into kind of the nuts and bolts of being a musician, but the music is certainly present in the film.
Speaking of nuts and bolts, it all comes down to money, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm glad you brought us here.
We just can't just create films by opening our pocketbook or our wallets.
Yeah.
So herein lies the only last issue or hurdle of creating this incredible film, Sunset and the Mockingbird, is De Niro. We need money.
Yeah.
And you have a Kickstarter campaign that's going on only for 4 more days.
That's
I think
right.
It ceases on Monday.
That is correct. End of day Monday, I believe.
And where are we? We're about 3/4 of the way there.
We're close. We're close. Again, we can make it work if everyone pitches in.
And we're generous listeners like you.
But when I started making this film, since I had made some films on jazz musicians, some of our co-producers or the team was like, well, you're connected to the jazz world. You must be able to get money from there. And I'm like, no, I can't. Everyone in the jazz world is looking for money. They don't have any money. I mean,
and healthcare.
Lincoln Center might. But the film, we have a Kickstarter going now. It's a modest, for what we really need, it's quite modest.
You're a couple grand away.
Yeah. Well, I think we're closer to 10 away, but we feel like it's reachable. We have 4 days to go.
That was like a Donald Trump statement. That was a couple grand. Oh, yeah. 10? Okay, same thing.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Go to the Kickstarter and see the trailer because it is really a powerful film.
Okay, so how can people find this particular Kickstarter?
Right. So if you just Google Kickstarter, Sunset and the Mockingbird, you'll get there. And, we don't have that far to go. We have 4 days. And the thing about the Kickstarter is we have really, even if you don't care about this film, which I think once you see the teaser, you're going to care. We have great gifts. We have giveaways, and we're working a lot with authors and musicians. So, it doesn't even have to be a donation. You can actually get something you want, like, CDs of Juniors or Bruce Jenkins, who's a San Francisco writer who's written a book on Alzheimer's and other stuff. His books are up there. You can donate and get one of these books. Jonathan Latham, I believe, we have some of his books to give away. So, we all kind of worked our connections with
great
gifts. And, if you go to the Kickstarter, you can donate to the film, which is a great film on its own. I mean, I'm biased, of course. But you can also kind of get something you probably are going to like as well as a thank you.
Not that this is going to make people reach for their phones and computers to donate money, but I hope it does. Sure. I will offer a tour of the PRN studios and facilities right here in Midtown New York if anybody.
All right. Yeah.
And let them sit on in an interview or whatever that takes for any contributions over $100. How about that?
Yeah, we'll put that on the site. Hopefully we'll get that up there today. Yeah, so there's, but beyond this immediacy, again, the Kickstarter ends in 4 days. We do want to create exposure awareness for the film in general because it's a long ways from being done. We have a lot of editing to do and awareness of, the disease. Again, the great thing about the film is you get exposure and awareness for music, this disease. It's working on a lot of levels. And we think it's going to be a great film.
So not that you're alone in not having a day job as a documentarian filmmaker.
Yeah.
But it's also aligned with what you do. You work for AMC.
Correct.
In the editing creative department.
Yes, yes.
So hopefully maybe you get some things a little bit more afforded to you than someone who's not in the industry.
Well, I like to take advantage of as much as I can over
yes.
there.
Maybe after hours, but it's okay.
I feel like corporate television is supporting the arts, whether they know it or not.
And I agree wholeheartedly with that, and I think they would, too, if they knew about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully they're not listening. Well, let them listen.
Well, they can maybe do a donation. We could,
They could certainly do a donation.
Absolutely, and they can afford to. So talk about any component of the film, whether it's a relationship issue or something that you saw in Junior Mance's eye. And by the way, he's named Junior because he has the same name of his father, who also was a pianist, correct?
His dad did play piano, I believe. It's hard to
tinkered
keep track
around.
Because, now when you talk to Junior, his what he tells you is not always reliable, unfortunately. But his dad was a clothes presser, was his main job. But his dad knew a lot of jazz musicians, and I believe he played piano and got Junior going on piano. So yes.
But is there any moment, whether it's on the film or not, or we'll make it into the film, where you just got something that just made your heart skip a beat?
Oh, God, that's every moment.
I like when they're dancing.
Yeah, they're dancing. So they record their last. Junior records his last CD, which was really tough because he was already had dementia at the time, and it was a hard session for the band and Junior and Gloria especially. She didn't know if she was going to get enough to release, which she did. It ended up being like beautiful music, but they took that back and they were listening to it at home, and Junior and Gloria listened to it and they danced to it. And that's a really beautiful moment, just watching them. You know, there's some tough moments too, though, because now Junior has a tough time playing a song. He can get lost in the song, which is why he's really not performing out anymore. So to see him kind of struggling to maintain his nimbleness on the piano, that's a real tough part to watch.
Is it visibly frustrating for Junior?
Oh, by all means, yeah. But, you know, it's funny because you can also use music. Music, you know, sometimes we go to his house and he can be quite grumpy. But if you start talking music or you put on music, that's just the salve. I mean, once that happens, he is all peaches and cream. And I think it's what keeps him going. The music keeps him going. And Gloria talks about that, too, in the film.
And you've made several films. And is it difficult, especially when you're doing a documentary, to keep some distance? So your judgment doesn't get clouded. So obviously what happens in the edit room doesn't get clouded.
Yeah, it is. And especially with this film, it's very easy to be sucked in emotionally. So, I mean, we've discussed as the disease accelerates with Junior, I shoot second camera for the film often, sometimes first camera, but I've already told Jillian, you know, as Junior gets more advanced, it's harder for me to shoot because I mean, we've become really close with Junior and Gloria over this time. So,
Adam, when you say second camera, you're talking not a direct shot off to the side?
Well, when budget permits, we would have two cameras. So we'll have kind of an A camera who's really following the action. And then the second camera would be kind of picking up maybe reaction. If Gloria's talking, the A camera might be on Gloria and the second camera might be following Junior's reaction or vice versa. So, second camera being the first camera is the one we're paying, and we know he's going to get the shot.
you can say the same thing. It's the bomb, man.
But the second camera, who's me, it's like, okay, not as much pressure. If I get some good shots, that's great. And, you know, sometimes they might not be as good because that's not my main purpose of being there. But
so you're going to get the money by Monday. I know that because PR and listeners and their fans and friends on Facebook and all social media will also put that out, and we'll have it on the Insight page on PRN.fm. Just go to Insight. Where do you hope this will land? Would you like to see this a year from now at Tribeca?
Yeah, we'd love to see it at Tribeca. I mean, we really have a good year road ahead of us. Because we're shooting so much, we're going to have a minimum of a six-month edit, and we haven't even started the editing. We edited the teaser for the, you know, promotional purposes, but the bulk of the film hasn't been touched as far as editing. So we've got a long road ahead of us. I mean, we ideally would like to see it premiere at Sundance, which would be January. I don't know if we'll make January 2018, so it might even be a year further. But certainly we want to see it hit all the big festivals such as Sundance, South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. Tribeca would be wonderful. I mean, he is a New York institution, really, and Junior loves New York. I mean, nowadays you talk to him and he knows, he'll talk about Evanston, but half the time he's like, no, I'm from here. This is, you know, the Big Apple. So he's
it's
really
the vibe. It's where music emanates, man.
Yeah,
it's everything, right?
Yeah, and he taught at the New School for a long time.
That's right.
And
30
he lives,
years or so.
Yeah, and
Thank
he
you.
Lives across the street, so he always points over there, and he's like, "Yeah, I was there, and you know, this is my place. These are my people."
And that kind of speaks volumes. We have to wrap it up, Adam. But
sure.
I mean, the fact that he was, you know, 100 albums and it spans more than 70 years, his career and teaching as well. So bring that magic. From someone's point of view that never learned it from the classroom,
right.
But to go back to the classroom and to rain all this information on these young, open, sponge-like minds is incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, now, especially in New York, you have a lot of guys from Junior's generation who are still here,
sure.
And you can go see them, and a lot of them teach, and it's, you know, again, that's a big reason to make the film, because you have these legacies, and it's just a wealth of music and information and history in these people.
So co-directors Adam Kahn and Jillian Gunther and myself, Mark Farrell, urge you to go to Kickstarter and put in the search Sunset and the Mockingbird. We're about 10K short for the completion of this movie, which sounds like it's going to do quite well. Do you have a bit of an edge having made several films when you submit a film to Tribeca or Sundance, et cetera, to getting some recognition?
I think so. I think, you know, if you have a track record with festivals, sure, they'll definitely take note of you. Sundance is particularly difficult. And also the reason we don't want this to be just a quote-unquote jazz film or quote-unquote music film. It's really about these two people, their relationship. You know, that being said, all the festivals kind of have what they like, the type of film they want, they'll take. I mentioned Sundance because when I applied with my last film, they said, you know, they were very nice. They looked at my film and they said, well, we're going to take two music films this year. And one is on Dave Grohl. So that
not a bad thing.
Yeah. So, but, you know, the other thing I just want to mention is we see a lot of jazz related films coming out recently, and you know, some go the path of straight music and ours is not, but you see a film like the Nina Simone film, which is really about her mental illness, and you see a film like the Lee Morgan film, which is about his wife who murdered him, and I think that the films, these types of films that have a broader story to tell, such as ours, which is again the love story of Junior and Gloria, I think, you know, they can go a lot further.
Yeah, and offer something for everybody, which is nice.
Yeah.
Nothing like cinema. Adam Kahn and Jillian Gunther, keep up the great and phenomenal work.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon. And get to Kickstarter, everybody. We'll be right back with Calvin Schwartz right after this. There's a ghost. Now, why didn't I write that song when I was younger and more wild? Now I just get up on stage across the country at schools, corporations, and organizations and tell everybody how goddamn wild I was and what I learned. And it's a miracle that I'm still here. That's his new song, boy, The Strumbellas. It sounds like a dessert. Strumbellas, Strumbellas. It's called Young and Wild. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network, 39 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock in New York City. And I'd love to introduce to you Cal Schwartz, if you're friendly with him. If you're not friendly with him, you better call him Calvin. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Well, I am thrilled.
Wow, man, you really project.
I project.
6 foot eight of you.
Yes. 6'6".
Six.
Thrilled to be here.
You look thrilled, and I'm thrilled to have you, my friend.
Really, really thrilled.
Writer, TV host, radio host, and lover of Rutgers University, because that hat, I think you shower with that hat.
I do.
Or the hat needs a shower. I'm not sure what happens.
I do,
there.
And actually, to clean the hats, we put them in a dishwasher.
Oh, is that a secret?
I've never learned
how to clean a hat.
This is all new stuff.
I usually discard it. Now, I bet you your wife taught you that. You didn't figure that out.
Not at all. It was strictly my wife.
See that?
Yes.
It's amazing what we learn from wives.
It's a wonderful instrument of knowledge.
Oh, you called your wife an instrument of knowledge?
Yes. I think I like it.
I don't think she's going to like that. Okay, moving on. So you were in the eyeglass business for a long, long time. You were a pharmacist, and you said, the hell with that. And there's many reasons why I wanted to have you on a show here, because obviously you got a great presence and persona in New Jersey, and your reputation is like concentric circles getting bigger and wider and impacting more people. And I love that. And I see all the things that you're involved in. But first and foremost, the change of how you kind of became a chameleon from doing one industry, filling pharmaceuticals. Personally, if I was a pharmacist, I would volunteer to work there for free because I'd be very happy and never need to require sleep. But I'm sure that's overrated. You went in the eyeglass business and you retired and you wrote a book.
Yes.
And that kind of changed your life and that kind of brought you to where you are right now. Take over, Calvin Schwartz.
Exactly. So 12 years as a pharmacist. Done 27 years in the eyeglass business, but that was actually productive. I worked for the largest eyewear company in the world. I worked for the richest Italian family in the world, the Del Vecchio family, who owns the Luxottica Group.
I thought that was Tony Montana.
No, not Tony Montana. It's pretty good. And they taught me so much. They taught me about life, and they prepared me. And they inculcated me, which is a great word.
That is a great word.
It's a great word. I looked it up on the dictionary on the train coming in here. So they gave me so much and helped to form me as a human being, as a person. Interpersonal skills, communicative skills, selling skills. It was a never-ending collection of lectures and interactions as a regional manager. And then, because I'm a spiritual guy, 10, 11 years ago, I had the inspiration to write. And it came to me, and it came to me after watching the movie Casablanca. And I started. It was a five-year project, and I wrote a novel because I felt this could help define the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And because I had never in my life ever finished anything that I started. So I
really?
Was, yes, never
Give me an example.
Anything. Just anything.
Like that deck in the back of your house?
It's nothing.
Just framed
nothing,
out and no decking.
Nothing was ever finished in my life. No projects.
Interesting,
no
but professionally.
Even relationships. Nothing was ever finished. I would just leave relationships in the middle.
Have you resolved that?
It's resolved.
Through your writing?
Yes, it was because I finished. I actually finished that novel and it got published. And then sitting home for a year trying to learn about publishing and so forth and so on, I drifted into journalism. Who would have ever thought that coming from my background that I would get involved in writing for magazines in Jersey and then subsequently radio?
Well, you know what? Sorry to interrupt you, Cal, but
yes.
I think nowadays with everything so widely available, especially publishing, but just all the material that's at your disposal. I mean, reading about, hey, how to build a deck, how to become a pharmacist, how to go see Adam Kahn's new film, Sunset and the Mockingbird. I mean, everything's there and alive. So it's never been a better time to all this information, sometimes information overload, but to realize that you have something inside of you that may have been dormant or never existed, but hey, it's alive.
you said the key word. What is coming out now was always inside of me. So my pharmacy career of 12 years was filled with frustration and not liking what I was doing for 12 years. It was a battle to get up and go to work because I didn't like it, despite the fact that the shelves were filled with things that could make me like it. But there was something inside me for a long, 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 long time that was restless. And as I started to enter this world of journalism and expose myself to so much different input, that my whole vista, my whole world began to expand. And the things that are inside that are coming out now, the more writing, starting a second novel, the TV show, I mean, all this stuff. It's like, wow, where was this?
And it's also brought you to a place where you're meeting people that you probably long to meet. Clarence Clemons' son.
Yes.
You're helping him, or I don't know if you're going to be the ghostwriter or share a level of author name of recognition on his book, but Clarence's son's name is?
Nick Clemons.
Nick Clemons gets to tell his story.
Yep. That was, actually, if you have to pick certain milestones in a life early on in my, quote, new journalism career, I had gone to a comedy festival in Asbury Park, and life is so funny, the synchronicity and how things develop. And then innocently, and Nick was actually sponsoring the comedy festival. It was his comedy festival to raise money for actually Lenny Bruce's daughter, Kitty, had started a home for wayward women, abused women in Pennsylvania. So the comedy festival was to raise money to help Kitty Bruce out. And Lenny Bruce was always a hero of mine. So that's why I went to that. And then there was an after party at the Wonder Bar, and I kind of schlepped my wife across the street, and there was Nick Clemons sitting at the bar wearing a Rutgers hat. He didn't go to Rutgers, went to University of Maryland, but so I went over to him just as a networking kind of thing to do and introduced myself and said I was a fan of, you know, Clarence, who's, you know, legendary.
Immortal, sure.
Correct, and handed him my business card just as the right thing to do. 6 weeks later, he calls me and said, would you like to talk about a project? And since I had time in my hand, because, you know, I'm a card-carrying member of AARP, I might not look it, but 6 weeks later, I go over to his house, and we start talking about this project, and lo and behold, we're talking about a book about Clarence and Nick and father-son relationship and about those wonderful things you hear about music, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
And how many years deep are you into this?
We did it solidly for a year, intensive interviews. And then I love this word, hiatus. It's just such a great word.
It's a great way to just say shit happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, you got lazy.
Yes.
You ran out of money.
It's a great euphemism. Yes.
It is. I love it.
It's a great euphemism. And I kind of drifted away for a bit of time. And now we're back with the different Nicks doing more, the intensity and the writing. And I'm kind of putting it all together and sort of like a ghost.
Is Nick close? And if you can't reveal this right now until the book comes out, is Nick close with the Clemons? Is that Clarence's nephew or cousin that plays?
That's Clarence's brother, Bill. I think it's Melvin Bill. That's his middle name. That's his son, Jake.
So it's his nephew.
That's his cousin. That's Nick's cousin.
Yes, Clarence's nephew, though.
Yes, that's correct. Clarence's nephew. Jake is playing.
Are they close?
Relatively close, you know, sure. I think it's a pretty, you know what, it's a very close family. And I also had the privilege and the honor of meeting the whole family a few years ago. Clarence's first wife, Jackie, Nick's mom, was visiting from Arizona, and they had a whole family get together. And I actually spent some time talking to Jackie. So, yes, the family is close.
And I like the fact that you have kind of melded all your life lessons and are kind of guiding other people with this. You're a mentor to two mentees, and they started an organization called PEDUL, P-E-D-U-L. And tell me the acronym for that.
PEDUL really means it's helping college kids pedal their way through college by raising money through crowdfunding. Tuition, something revolutionary. When I heard about it, I jumped all over it because I felt that less and less do we see government being able to step in and help kids go to college. Government's busy now, you know, trying to fix the train tracks in Penn Station. That needs to get fixed. I just happen to bring some...
And trying to come up with a budget so we don't have a government shutdown this Friday night.
Correct, correct.
Little things like that.
So when I heard about all this, I jumped all over it. I believed in what these kids were doing. I had a relationship with these kids. They're Rutgers graduates, happened to be. And they started this company, Pedal, and they believe that they can help kids go to college and raise money through tuition. So I jumped all over it, and I see them once a month, and we sit and we talk for 4 or 5 hours. It's my belief, and again, why I got involved, it's my belief that the generation coming on now, the millennials, this generation, they can't, when I compare them to my generation, you know, my generation had 7 black and white television stations that went off the air at midnight. And you have that test pattern, you know, that. And that was it. That was my world. And it wasn't much more than that. And their world is 24/7 input beyond belief.
Mm. Saturation overload.
Correct. It's so intense. But what I've noticed, and I came up with this little slogan, you know, their generation, the millennials, text, and my generation still talks. So based on that, there's room for me to interact with these kids and mentor them in the art of communication and socialization and talking, which they probably need help on. And that's where I jump in.
And now you gravitate towards TV and radio, New Jersey Discovery. And,
yes.
And how did that happen? Was it by happenstance?
It was happenstance. I was just talking about this last night. I was at the Strand Theater in Lakewood. They had their 95th birthday party.
Really?
95th.
Theater looks amazing.
It's amazing.
And great acts.
Great. It's just a great theater.
Normal Productions, yeah.
It's a great theater. It was built in 1922 because a lot of very wealthy people, including Rockefeller, probably used to vacation in Lakewood back then. We didn't know that, and we were local guys.
I still don't believe it.
Yep, they vacationed there. So they built this theater so while they're vacationing, they can see Broadway shows before they go to Broadway. And that's how this whole theater, and they put in some of the best acoustics on the planet there. It's great theater. So I got involved with it because I love it. It's ambiance and so forth and so on. But we were talking about this, you know, just last night.
Your entree into the media.
Yeah,
realm.
Yeah. How it all happened, and what I said last night is somebody someday is going to write a brief for the Wharton School of Business on NJ Discover, how this all came about. When I came into NJ Discover, they are an amazing production company. They can produce a 2-minute video, or they can make a 90-minute movie with $1 million worth of equipment. NJ Discover, he's an artist, he's a craftsman, he's genius. But they were focusing strictly on production. And when I was introduced to him, I offered to write some of his Facebook content. And if my life depended on me, I couldn't give you the chronology, but it went from writing some Facebook posts to covering some stories to spending days and days at Tent City in Lakewood learning about homelessness and then covering music 5 nights a week in Asbury Park. And it just completely, beyond my wildest dreams, which is a song from the Moody Blues, Wildest Dreams.
Yes.
Thought I'd throw that in.
So that's incredible, your trajectory and how you just got ensconced in such a great medium or mediums, you know, obviously radio and TV and your passion for writing and just coming from a pharmaceutical background, sales background. Obviously, you're a very gregarious, magnanimous person. Convivial. Should I keep going with the adjectives?
I like that. Like gregarious.
And giant. But you're in this new world, and you're just really, really succeeding. And you can see it. You're oozing in happiness.
It's
I wouldn't say that statement again, oozing in happiness, but it just kind of came out. It's organic,
like it.
You know?
I like it. I like it. It's purely...
Don't read into it, folks.
Yes. Purely, it's a wondrous journey for
good,
me.
Good
and
for
I
you.
Love... every aspect of what I'm doing. And, you know, each day is an adventure, and I don't plan any of this. And listen, I never took a writing course. I never studied English, basically. It's all science.
And your writing is very, not only is it conversational, it's original. And I'm not doing it justice. It's written in a form that's unique. and each sentence may not have a lot of depth. And this is a macro statement, but it has entertainment because it's uniquely written, and I really enjoy that because obviously anybody can pen, but whether it pulls somebody in. And the content matter between, you could have two different writers and the content matter subject can be the same, but it's perspective and how you twist it and pull people in, and you do a great job on it.
Thank you. Thank you. When I set upon writing, I had to come up with something to guide myself. And I looked at the world and I said to myself, the world is absurd. And this is...
I think the world would agree with you there. Now.
Yeah, the world is absurd
I certainly
in so many
will.
Different ways. And because of that, I said, I'm going to make my writing absurd. I'm going to try to follow...
Well, it's tongue-in-cheek as well.
Yeah. So
I love it.
So I wanted to make it unique and absurd and express just my view of the world. So I try to infiltrate a lot of my writing with absurdity because that's the way I believe.
And we welcome the absurdity.
Thank
What's
you.
Next for Calvin Schwartz?
I'm starting a second novel. And it's based. It's fiction, but it's my journey, how I got here, sitting with you, Mark. It's from day one, how I was put on this earth, and all the spirituality that's come into my life from day one, and the discovery of the spirituality and the things that have led me. It's also going to give me an opportunity to be a flag waver for my generation, the baby boomers and AARP card-carrying members. I'm going to create a super senior citizen as a character.
I think there's a film in your future.
Well, I wouldn't mind that.
You could do something.
I wouldn't mind that.
I've always wanted to be an editor, so maybe I'll pick up a camera and I'll follow you around for a week or two on my...
I would love that.
When I take a hiatus.
Yes, I would love that.
Calvin Schwartz, all the best to you. Thanks for making time for us and your busy schedule between being on TV, radio, and your writing. Nick Clemens, any idea when a Nick Clemens book would be released?
I would love to think that within the next year.
Great.
Or, if not sooner.
Great. And will your name be graced on the cover?
My name will be graced because we talked about it
Good.
Last week.
Of course, you got to work that
graced.
Stuff out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All the best to you, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Special thanks to Adam Kahn and Jillian Gunther, co-directors and producers for the Sunset and the Mockingbird documentary film. Make sure you go on a Kickstarter and put in Sunset and the Mockingbird and contribute what you can for this incredible film about jazz icon Junior Mance. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for spending today and every Thursday right here on PRN.FM. For me to speak at your school, college, organization, or more, check out MarkFarrellMotivation.com if my voice doesn't stop squeaking. MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Of course, special thanks to Kelsey on the control. If you could see her, gentlemen, she's gorgeous. And Jesse, who's rather dapper and handsome as well. Mark Farrell on PRN. Insight next week. Have a great day!